I sure would be surprised and grateful to see these kinds of discussions on the progressive airwaves. The subtle ways in which we are conditioned to accept what is as what must be, and therefore set up to believe that there is no alternative. So I turned to W.E.B. Du Bois for his help again, to help us through this discussion of the implicit bias called reverence for the intelligent, contempt for the common, so-called, after which we'll attempt to link it up with some advocacy I heard recently from a few commentators on the Black Lives Matter protests for the use of a diversity of tactics, so-called, or why we smash stuff and why smashing stuff is not the point, but let's do it anyway. This excerpt from W.E.B. Du Bois was written in 1919 when Du Bois was 51. And yes, we are talking 100 years ago. Tell me we haven't been treading water, held in suspended animation for millennia. Quote, great as are human differences and capabilities, there is not the slightest scientific reason for assuming that a given human being of any race or sex cannot reach normal human development if he's granted a reasonable chance. This is, of course, denied. It is denied so volubly and so frequently and with such positive conviction that the majority of unthinking people seem to assume that most human beings are not human and have no right to human treatment or human opportunity. All this goes to prove that human beings are and must be woefully ignorant of each other. It always startles us to find folks thinking like ourselves. In my comment, recall our sub-theme this week, that commodification of human, and it's a sub-theme of the overall needing to out the hidden implicit bias of contempt for the common, reverence for the so-called intellectual, which is outing power, is what I'm arguing. But the sub-theme this week, commodification of, and it's really an expression of the same thing, as we'll see as we explore some of the argument from previous shows in which we were looking at the notion of the market establishing the value of things. So we call our sub-theme this week that commodification of human energy is power stamping its tattoo on our ass, i.e. the privatization of our uniqueness, the laying claim to mystery, that which cannot be claimed, and that to even attempt such audaciousness, our communal existence must be split, atomization. Our earth-given gift of communality, of sociability, of cooperativeness, of mutual aid shattered. But we are in a different moment, the come to fruition of Nicholas' promise that with his gift and that of his fellow tribesmen, our future freedom awaits. We must but believe in it. Continuing, if the foundations of democracy are thus seen to be sound, how are we going to make democracy effective where it now fails to function, particularly in industry? The Marxists assert that industrial democracy will automatically follow public ownership of machines and materials. We learned, 100 years on, we finally learned, no. No, the state is the state is the state. Power is power is power. Continuing. Their opponents, to the Marxists' opponents, object that nationalization of machines and materials would not suffice because the mass of people do not understand the industrial process. They do not know what to do, how to do it, who could do it best, or how to apportion the resulting goods. Now, there can be no doubt but that monopoly of machines and materials, and my comment interjection, that would be in earth speak, us and the earth. Continuing, that monopoly of machines and materials is a chief source of the power of industrial tyrants over the common worker, and that monopoly today is due as much to chance and cheating as to thrift and intelligence. So far as it is due to chance and cheating, the argument for public ownership of capital is incontrovertible, even though it involves some interference with long-vested rights and inheritance. This is being widely recognized in the whole civilized world. But how about the accumulation of goods due to thrift and intelligence? Would democracy and industry interfere here to such an extent as to discourage enterprise and make impossible the intelligent direction of the mighty and intricate industrial process of modern times? The knowledge of what to do in industry and how to do it in order to attain the resulting goods rests in the hands and brains of the workers and managers, and the judges of the result are the public. Consequently, it is not so much a question as to whether the world will admit democratic control here as how can such control be long avoided. Or my interjection, I suggest the more relevant question, how has such control been so long avoided, given that we the people, we great sea of commoners, do it all. We create, we manage, we judge the result. Continuing, how could it be long avoided once the people understand the fundamentals of industry? Quoting Du Bois, how can civilization persist in letting one person or a group of persons by secret inherent power, our theme today, determine what goods shall be made, whether bread or champagne, overcoats or silk socks? Can so vast a power be kept from the people? And of course the answer has been, yes it can, and it has been. The next question being, how has that monopoly on confidence and knowledge, because that's what we're really talking about, how has that monopoly on confidence and knowledge been achieved, particularly in a so-called democracy? And Du Bois provided the answer by keeping secret its hoarding. And how best to hide a secret in plain sight, i.e., we are kept from seeing it by embedding it into our way of seeing, with it becoming the background to thought, the context within which thought occurs, making it seem that accepting its premises is the prerequisite to thinking itself, that if you do not accept them, you cannot be a thinker, quote unquote, with the implied threat that you could be forced to be its opposite. And aren't we all so afraid of being that?